Before we get to today's edition of the Five Reasons podcast with ESPN front office insider Bobby Marks, I want to tell you about one of our great sponsors, and that is BetQL. BetQL is an app for your iPhone or Android that gives you the very best advice to help you gamble smarter. They give recommendations based upon where they think lines should be on sporting events. So, like, for example, for college football this weekend, they have Auburn taking on Tennessee. Auburn is a 15-point favorite, but they think that Auburn should be a 23-point favorite, and so they think you should be on Auburn. That is a three-star play from BetQL. In terms of the line movement, it's actually gone down since it opened from 16.5 to 15. You can keep track of line movement there and tell you what the public is wagering on the two teams. For NFL games as well, for example, coming up this weekend in week number 6 of the NFL, the Eagles taking on the Giants. The Eagles are a 3-point favorite against the G-Men on Thursday Night Football, but they think the Eagles should be favored by 11. The public is mostly on the Giants, so they think they should be hammering the Eagles on Thursday Night Football. That kind of information and much more. You can keep track of all your bets and obviously follow the latest data on these games over the BetQL app. Download it now in the Apple App Store or Google Play. And now, Bobby Marks.
Welcome into the latest episode of the Five Reasons podcast. I'm Ethan Skolnick here, as always, with Chris Whittingham. Now that you've found us, make sure that you hit the subscribe or follow button on your favorite podcast provider. That way you'll get all of our old episodes, including our Heat Stories episodes, as well as all of our new episodes as soon as they post. Also, turn on notifications. That will make it easier to find them. Also, if you go to your favorite podcast provider and type in Five Reasons Sports, you'll find all 13 podcasts in our network, including Miami Heat Beat as they get ready for the season, and 3 yards per carry as they disassociate themselves from the Dolphins after this past weekend. For our next episode, we have been talking a lot about Jimmy Butler here on our Twitter feed. We finally did an episode this week. As we're taping this, stuff is still flying around, but nothing has officially happened. But we want to bring in somebody who understands how front offices work and how this situation has gotten so out of control, and also to talk about some other things going on around the league. And that's our friend Bobby Marks, worked in the Nets front office for 20 years and now is ESPN's front office insider, often shows up here at some Heat games too. Bobby, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Hey, guys. How are you?
We're good. Let's start here with the Butler situation. I mean, by the time we finish taping this, there'll be 12 more reports. So I'm not sure how this goes, but I want to see if you can take us through it from a front office perspective, because I've covered the Heat since 96, and I have never in 22 years seen any situation they've been involved with get this public and this messy. And I know it's not something that they like. And so just from a front office perspective, why do you think this has played out like this over the past 3 weeks?
I think a lot of it has to do with the Butler camp. You've got an agent who, you know, let's face it, really Jimmy Butler is his only high-level client. I think it would be a little bit different if it was Mark Bartlestein or Jeff Schwartz or Leon Rose, some of the, you know, high-profile agents. That's not to say that Bernie Lee, the agent for Jimmy Butler, can't do it the right job, but I think there was a lot of miscommunication here. I think, you know, from Butler's side, there was never going to be a renegotiation for Minnesota this summer to get him a bigger pay raise this summer. I think it got to a point where Jimmy Butler realized he had to return to Minnesota before training camp. And, you know, by putting it out in public, the demand to be traded was more of a leverage play from Butler's camp that somewhat has a little bit backfired now. And now you've got an owner and Glenn Taylor in Minnesota involved who really wants this, you know, wants some resolution to this, you know, to the situation. And yeah, you know, rarely does it become this public. You know, I've been involved in a bunch. I mean, I think the closest was probably Carmelo Anthony in 2010, but that was a little bit different because Anthony wound up, although he wanted to, you know, he was going to, I guess, opt out of his contract the following year. It wasn't really, a trade demand. It was basically, you know, saying that, you know, I'm going to keep my options open. If there was something out there, I would like to be, you know, maybe one of the New York markets. And he still showed up for training camp. And they, you know, as I mentioned before, they, you know, I think they had, they were over 500 at the time he was traded. And it, although it was public, they did it. Denver did as good a job, trying to keep it on the down low here. But yeah, this is as public, a bitter divorce that I think we've seen in a long time here.
When you say that Jimmy Butler's trade demand has backfired, why do you think it's backfired?
I think when you put it out there that, A, you only want to go to three teams, those three teams have cap space to go out and sign you next year. There's no incentive for those teams to go out there. If you start putting demands to teams, unless it gets to the point where Glenn Taylor, overrules Tom Thibodeau and basically does the trade himself. But we're what are we 2 weeks from when it happened, when, this came out, and there still hasn't been a demand. I think the best situation where the Butler camp would have been is to go to Thibodeau and let him know. And I think that's what they did, was, that the intention is that Jimmy's not going to re-sign as a free agent in 2019. That we would like to be traded some part of the season, either now or at the deadline, and go from there. And now we've got a player who's not in Minnesota. We've got, trying to hold the feet to the fire here, and there's still no resolution. And from the looks of it, there's no urgency from that Timberwolves front office to try to get a deal done.
We're talking to Bobby Marks here, ESPN's front office insider. Now, there's been some reports, and I've heard a lot of this too, about some internal stuff in Minnesota, whether it's between Towns and Butler, whether it's between Tibbs and Taylor. And I from being in a front office for all that time, how much can that stuff play into a negotiation like this? Because it does strike me that, I mean, you've dealt with the Heat. I know that there are differences sometimes internally, but that those differences don't really get out. These have kind of gotten out on the Minnesota side. So when you have one side that may appear aligned and you have another side that's moving in a bunch of different directions, how does that affect a negotiation?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, with Miami and having dealt with Andy Ellisberg, their general manager, for a long time there, when you have a conversation with Andy Ellsberg about parameters of a trade, or if you're calling to inquire about certain players, that 99% of the time that's not getting out. Maybe I can even bump it up to 100, because there is a trust level there. And I think Miami is the counter opposite to where Minnesota is, where you have things lined up from ownership to Pat Riley, Andy Ellsberg, and then Eric Spoelstra, where in Minnesota, I'm not a big believer, and I've never been about the head coach, having total power. I think outside of, I guess, San Antonio, it doesn't work. We saw it fail in Detroit. We saw it fail in LA with the Clippers, with Doc Rivers for all those years. And I think they are so unaligned right now. When you look at Tibbs, who, Tom Thibodeau is worried about coaching his team right now. Tom Thibodeau is worried about game one next week. He is, probably the last thing he wants to worry about is Jimmy Butler. He's trying to get his, this team into the playoffs here. And then you have an owner who's trying to get a deal done, even if you're taking 50 cents on the dollar here. So yeah, it's totally two different organizations. And, as nuts as things were in Brooklyn and New Jersey there, when we went about going to go about a deal, there was rarely times when we were backing, we were all on board. Even if it backfired down the road, we went around the room, and it wasn't a majority vote, but we all had our say in it. And if there was anything that we had concerns about, we would pull out of it. So, it's just two different organizations that are, and it's ironic, two different, counter opposite of two different organizations right now.
In terms of negotiations in this trade, when you look at the negotiating power of each side here, it was sort of specifying on Miami here. When you look at the power of a Heat team that doesn't really have any stars and it has some assets, but I don't know the degree to which you can really hold on to them in a negotiation like this. But comparing to Minnesota, you mentioned the fact that the teams on his list aren't really competing to go and get Jimmy Butler. When you're sort of analyzing the way that these two sides are negotiating, how do you think it would go, and who do you think has the stronger position right now?
Well, I think Miami does right now, unless Minnesota can try to get a second team involved, a second team that does not have cap space next year. And I think, we've heard Houston. I just don't see the unless it's Eric Gordon and multiple first round picks, but those picks are going to be in the 29-30 for the future. Their main guys are certainly off the board there. So I don't see how Houston can potentially put a package together. And it's basically kind of, we've talked about the teams, New York, the Clippers, Brooklyn, teams that have cap space. And if they wanted to do a deal, they would have done one by now. And they feel that, at least, Brooklyn and New York, they've, hit the rebuild button the last couple of years, that they can be patient and wait until the summer of 2019. And, with Miami, it's a little bit different because they are a team, you guys know their cap, they're over the cap. They are, they're a luxury tax team. We know what they can offer right now. But there's no other team out there for them to bid against. So if you're the Heat, what you're doing is, and you kind of go in your war room and you line up, all right, these are the guys that we are, we're interested in moving. These are the guys we would move. And then you got to draw a line in the sand as far as how far would we go? You can only, trade certain amount of picks because that pick is going out to Philly in 2021. What are you going to do with Justice Winslow? Are you content signing him long-term to an extension? If you do that, then he's off the board. And then you've got some long-term contracts that are probably not as quite of appealing with Olynyk, Waiters is hurt, James Johnson there, Dragic and Whiteside have player options for next year. And then it basically boils down to Josh Richardson. And you guys have documented that, pretty well. I mean, in the beginning, I thought, if I was Miami that, Richardson would be a non-starter. But the more you go down the path, and if you are intent on Butler and signing him long-term, then he's going to be the likely guy to go. And then it's just a matter of getting the salaries to match. But you do have to draw a line in the sand. I know there were, as Woj and a bunch of people reported that they were somewhat close over the weekend. But if you're Miami and you're that front office, what you offered is what is going to be the next deal is. There's no more adding more into this.
Where do you think that the Heat should draw the line in the sand? Obviously, you're talking about the different players that they could, but if you're sort of looking at their roster right now, and Minnesota, and it was reported by the Miami Herald that, that Minnesota's asking for everyone's firstborn. If you were Pat Riley and that negotiating team, where would you draw the line in the sand?
It would be Josh. I would put Josh Richardson in, and I was, as I mentioned, I was hesitant there, and that would be it. I basically would say it's Josh Richardson, and look at our roster with Olynyk and Waiters to make the money work there. And you're getting a young, you guys have followed Josh for, since they drafted him. I mean, he is a really good two-way player here. And for a team that does not have much leverage in Minnesota, that is as good as what you're going to, what you're going to get there. You've got to get up to about $16 million to work. Josh is making nine and change. So you've got to get, you're going to have to start adding some pieces here. But if you're asking for multiple first round picks, and maybe you do your 2019 first and you protect it 1 to 20 and roll it over to maybe some seconds in the future there. But I would not start adding, picks that are, going into 2023 or 24, because we don't know where this roster is going to, where we're going to be here. But it's just, it'll be hard to try to get the numbers up there. I would be hesitant including Bam Adebayo there, because with Whiteside, he's an insurance policy with what happens with Sasan here. So I think if I am the Heat front office and you're looking at the roster, it you can have Richardson and then look at what our roster is to try to get that money to work.
We'll get back to the NBA conversation with Bobby Marks here in a second. But first, excited to tell you about one of our great, great sponsors, which, like us, is Pure South Florida. That's Doral Toyota, where you can find all of your favorite Toyota models, whether you're looking for a new, used, or certified pre-owned vehicle. Doral Toyota is located at 9775. That's 9775. Northwest 12th Street in Doral, just a few blocks from International and Dolphin Malls. Experience the Doral difference, which means 4 years complimentary maintenance and roadside assistance on all new vehicles. In-house financing is also available if you have credit-related issues. If you mention Five Reasons when you call 305-680-1129, that's 305-680-1129, or you come into the dealership, you work directly with a dedicated manager, not a salesman. And you can look for Alex tuck a little heat with him too. Unlike other dealers, Doral Toyota prides itself on an honest and transparent buying process. That's Doral Toyota, DoralToyota.com, or stop in at 9775 Northwest 12th Street. Vamos, let's go. And now, back to the episode. Talking to Bobby Marks here, you mentioned other teams that could have gotten involved that didn't, the three that were originally on his list. But, I mean, others, I mean, I have not heard that Philadelphia put anything attractive on the table. They certainly have pieces where they could. I've not heard that Milwaukee put Middleton on the table. That could make it more interesting. The Clippers, I've heard, have not put Tobias Harris on the table. So, I mean, when you look at this, you mentioned Gordon. That report came out. I'd heard Tucker was not on the table at that time. So when you look at it, I mean, Josh or Dragic to me would be the most attractive piece that has been talked about that might actually be out there. But I want to ask you something specific about Butler, because when I tweeted, about Josh and Jimmy, you know, I made the case that at age 24 in their third year, Josh Richardson actually had better numbers than Jimmy Butler. And he's 4 years younger at this stage. And then you replied that he's also on a much better contract. I mean, he's making about 40 something million over the next four, whereas Jimmy would make that in his last year when he's 33, 34 years old. Do you have, I guess, two questions. One, just looking at it, as you look at Josh as an asset, do you project as a front office, do you project and say, well, Jimmy made that jump, maybe he can make that jump and be a little scared of doing that? And two, what do you think of Jimmy Butler as a player going forward? Because, Tom Thibodeau players have, worn down a little bit. I mean, we've seen it with Noah. We've seen it with Deng. I know there were other circumstances with Rose that one's hard to evaluate, but he plays his guys a lot of minutes. He once played Jimmy 48 straight minutes, three straight games during one stretch. I mean, are you concerned? I guess the first would be, would you project Josh to get into Jimmy's sphere in the next 4 years? And two, what do you think of Jimmy Butler as an aging player?
I don't think Josh could get into that. I think Butler is in that 10 to 15 range. You know, if we're looking for, I guess we're ranking guys there. I think he's in that next tier. I don't think Josh could get in there in that range. I think he could certainly get in that, that 25 to 30 range. He's got a great contract. I mean, 4 for 42 in this day and age is a home run deal compared to what you have to pay Jimmy Butler, likely 5 for 190 or maybe 4 for, 145. If you can do something like they did with Houston did with Chris Paul there. My concern with Jimmy Butler is not 2019-20 or even the next year. It's years 3, 4, and 5. I mean, here's a guy that's averaged, 37 plus minutes in the last 5 or 6 years and has played in for Tom Thibodeau, during that time frame. And what is going to be left on the wheels here, going forward when you're paying him, $40 million plus? I think the tease is that if you're Miami and you're looking at your roster, is that yes, he is an upgrade over Josh Richardson right now. You are kind of in that in between stage where you're probably in that 5 to 8 range, I guess. If from a seating standpoint. And does Jimmy Butler, can he get you into that top 4 range? And I think, right now, based on what that roster is, and that's kind of that's the question that you have to throw around there. I think he does right now. I mean, it does matter what you give up. But my big concern, I've said it all along, is that, what are you going to be paying a player, in years 3, 4, and possibly 5 here? And that's a lot of money.
Which situation in your career that you personally dealt with does this remind you of?
This is Carmelo. This is a lot like Carmelo, just based on, in 2010, we went through it, and it was really just us in New Jersey dealing with Denver, and then New York came in at the end. And that's what basically that Houston needs to do is Minnesota needs to do is, they need to find a New York out there that can, go getting into a bidding war with Miami here. And as I mentioned, there really isn't a team out there, but the Carmelo situation was certainly, out. It was public. We were close multiple times to getting a deal. Denver kind of backed away a little bit. We thought we were close again in, January to get a deal done. They backed away again. I think this is probably as close, in the Butler situation as far as, from a trade standpoint, with Carmelo. But, with Carmelo, we never got to the point when we were sharing medical and insurance information. you know, I've said all along, when you start doing that and you have your trainers talk and your doctors talk and your administrative people, you're looking over medical information and player insurance, you are as close to getting a deal done as possible. And, you know, as the reports were this weekend, that was the case here. So, and then you kind of pull away from the table. So that's certainly a rare instance there.
Talking to Bobby Marks, front office insider for ESPN. One more on Butler, and then I want to pivot to the Heat in the league here real quick. So let's say Jimmy doesn't get traded, because the latest report that I have is that he's asked to be traded by Friday. And, you know, I don't know what the leverage is there, other than if he decides to say, I'm going to go have surgery, which I know is something that came up in the Kyrie situation, which there have been some whispers about that. But let's say they hold him until the season. Let's say that Glenn Taylor doesn't come over the top. Tibbs doesn't want to deal him, still thinks he can make it right. How does an organization handle that? Because I'm checking out the reports in Minnesota. The building was 2/3 empty for a preseason game. There are at least a couple other players that I know of who just want this situation resolved. There's at least one prominent agent who I know wants this situation resolved, who's involved with that team and has a lot of other clients. Like, how do you deal with this as an organization if Jimmy Butler's still on the roster as of opening night?
Yeah, I mean, I never really want to jump to conclusions based on preseason games, but they've been terrible. I mean, they've been lethargic, the Timberwolves. You know, I mean, and we still have, we haven't even hit the regular season yet. I mean, them and, you know, in Chicago are the two teams that have been really lackadaisical. And I think Jeff Teague said it the best. I think there was a quote in the paper yesterday where he said, like, you kind of knew, you saw it coming because we didn't play with each other during the summer. No, we didn't do any of these team bonding experiences. We basically just showed up the first day of media day and then rolled out the ball. And this is what our team was. And I think, you know, when that happens, that's setting you up for failure. And then you have the Butler situation compounded here. I think if you're Butler, that you have to show up, because there's a clause in the CBA, there's a withholding clause there, that if he tried to pull power play and does not show up or, you know, holds out, you know, there's a 30-day window where basically it would not void his contract, but it would really hurt him from free agency standpoint. Basically, Butler would not be a free agent in 2019. So if I'm him and if I'm his agent, then if there is no deal at the end of the week or close, I'm showing up and I am going through the routine there. Now, is there an injury out there that, you know, that all of a sudden mysteriously kind of creeps in? That's, I guess, for another day. But if I'm Jimmy Butler, I am appearing. But you're right, it's certainly a distraction for a player that wants nothing to do with that organization here. And then, you know, all eyes are on them the first couple of weeks of the season. Do you get off to an 0-5 start, an 0-6 start? What happens, you know, what happens there? And that's going back to the ownership. You know, does it get to a point where, you know, Glenn Taylor basically overrules Tom Thibodeau and that front office on a deal and get something done sooner rather than later?
We'll get back to Bobby Marks here in a second, but Chris and I have been doing some betting over at betdsi.com using our promo code REASON101. We got our initial deposits matched up to $2,500, which allowed us to keep losing, which is what I've been doing lately. But I'm telling you, I'm going to be turning it around. Why did I not bet the Saints and give the points? It was Drew Brees night. You knew he was going to throw 13 touchdowns just to stick it to the Dolphins, who could add him twice. Anyway, go to betdsi.com, REASON101. What are they saying about the Heat on there, Chris?
Yeah, the Miami Heat over-under is basically 500. If you want to bet the Miami Heat to go over 500 and make the postseason, it's sitting, I believe, at last time I checked, it was either 41.5 or 42.5. And if they make a Jimmy Butler trade, then you'd have to imagine that goes way up. So get in on it now. Use the promo code REASON101. NFL in full swing. College football in full swing. The hockey season has started. The baseball playoffs are going on. Never a better time than now to get to betdsi.com and use a promo code REASON101.
So I want to go back to the Heat here for a second. You mentioned that you've dealt with them for many years. I've covered them for many years. And I was surprised by what they did the past two off seasons, because it was so unlike them. I mean, not to go all the way back to 2014 and what happened with LeBron and some of the Grangers and the McRoberts and some of those deals, but just starting from 2016, from, you know, not signing Dwayne, but then giving the money in a match to Tyler Johnson, signing Hassan right at the very start, which I've got to acknowledge I was supportive of at the time, but obviously that hasn't worked out the way that they hoped. And then you go to 2017 and the 3 4-year deals, the James Johnson, until he's 34 years old at a pretty hefty number. Deion Waiters coming off an injury that likely was going to need surgery for 4 years. And then you mentioned Olynyk, which is the one of those five that's actually worked out, but also a four-year deal to him. Were you surprised by the way that they conducted business the last 2 years and kind of in some ways made it harder for them to get in the room?
I think the Tyler Johnson contract killed them. And I like Tyler as a player, but how Brooklyn structured that where, you know, it was 5-5 and then it jumps to 19. When you match that, basically the clock started as far as how you can go about, how about using cap space in 2017. Yes, I was on board with the, Hassan Whiteside signing. You know, as you mentioned, I've seen, a lot of Heat games in person and, he was coming off a really strong playoff. In 16. I was fine with Whiteside. I think when you know that Johnson contract eventually is going to kick in this year, then it kind of forces your hand to go out there and probably overspend on some players to kind of, it's basically use it or lose it. You know, if you don't use the cap space last summer in 17, that when this summer comes around, that number jumps up, then you're really limited as far as what you can do. And yeah, I mean, I think the Waiters contract out of the three is certainly because Deion's been hurt, has not been a good contract, and now you're looking to shed it. And then what is it going to cost you to do so? And then it's funny that I thought out of the three that I was more skeptical about the Olynyk contract than anything. And yeah, he's probably been the better of the three players so far here. So, they did get in the room, last year with Hayward, of course he went to Boston there. So this is kind of who your roster is. And it's funny because, with how that organization works, it's always, championship level, targeting championships. As I say, big game hunting here. And now you're somewhat content with, I guess you're on that treadmill of, you're a good team. If you play hard every night, you'll be in every game and you'll win your 45 to 46, games, but you're not on that level. You're not on that elite level here. So, that's kind of where the summer of 17 kind of, bit you a little bit.
Would you say that right now the Heat's way out of it is only the passage of time and getting off of these contracts and going again in free agency in 2020? Or do you think that if they did execute this Jimmy Butler trade or try to get into the trade market next year with Whiteside and Tyler Johnson as expirings, that they can maybe speed this process up a little bit?
I think Miami's looking at 2020 as a free agent class that is probably the one of worst that we're going to see in a long time. That is, it is a below average class. 2019, as you guys know, is really strong. 2020 is a lot of these contracts that were signed in 2016 when the cap rose and players got overpaid. There is a good, we don't know what will happen next summer, that maybe some guys do some 1 year deals and go into, 2020 as free agents. But I think if you're Miami's looking at, that the ability to get a all-star level for a team that's over the cap is sitting right in front of them right now. And if we can do so with despite risking some cap flexibility in 2020, then that is the goal here. And eventually some of these contracts will start coming out. We'll see what happens with, Dragic and Whiteside have player options as well as Johnson, next summer here. And this cap is going to start rising. We're going to go to 109 to 106, 116, and then probably 120 in 3 years from now. So, eventually these contracts will start shedding off.
We're going to do some rapid fire here with Bobby to close this out. So just want to get your opinions on what certain teams did this offseason. Let's start with the Lakers. Not the big one, because obviously that was pretty good. But the surrounding pieces, the 1 year contracts for a lot of guys who've had, just to be straight, checkered pasts in other places. Do you think they did a good job filling out that roster, and do you see a long-term plan there?
I think it's an experiment as far as the long-term. I consider these guys placeholders. It's almost like it's a trial and error to see what would work in 2019, and kind of, Rajon Rondo and Lance Stevenson are kind of the guinea pigs here. So I didn't get crazy about what they did. I know a lot of people criticize them. I like the Rondo signing because with Lonzo as a veteran mentorship, but I think with LeBron, the mindset was that we were probably going to be a 45 to 46 win team and compete for a playoff spot and try to get these young kids to develop to a point where, either they're going to be here long term or they're going to be used as an asset down the road here. So it's a mixed bag. But as you guys saw when he committed, the first couple of days into free agency, this was the plan all along based on how they timed each one of these signings.
And with Houston, do you think they got closer or farther away to the Warriors?
I think they got closer. You know, I know the Ariza and Bamute departure hurts. You added James Ennis. You brought back the whole, with Capella and Chris Paul. I saw Houston last week in Birmingham. And, if Chris Paul can stay healthy, man, he looks as good as he's been in a long time here. And I think it's all about these guys. Can Harden stay healthy? Can Chris Paul stay healthy? Capella? I'm fine with their depth. If you're going to start Tucker at the four and have Carmelo come off the bench, what does Carter Williams have come backing up Chris Paul there? So I think they got a little bit closer based on, maybe what they did this summer. And then I think, Golden State will be interesting during the regular season based on that team is not built, depth wise, for 82 games. And do they get bored during the season? Past years here, it's more, that team is built for the long haul for the playoffs here. So I think that Houston team did get closer to Golden State.
Toronto, what would you, if I was to ask you right now for a percentage that Kawhi Leonard is a Raptor next season, where would you put it at?
I would put it at 30%. And I just from reading the tea leaves, the amount of teams that have cap space next year, including the Clippers, who are certainly one of the favorites here. But I think that number could increase throughout the year. I think this Toronto team has a chance to get out of the East, even with Boston in Philadelphia. And I think, Masai Ujiri is going to have to basically steal the Sam Presti playbook and really do a great job of in-house recruiting Kawhi Leonard here and let the record speak for itself that where this team winds up going, that, Kawhi will have to make a decision as far as, a rebuilding Clipper team or maybe even the Lakers versus, staying in the East and being on a real, real good team. But I think entering the season, I look at it right at 30%.
Philly, they go out in the Eastern semis and were beaten pretty well by Boston as well after beating Miami in the postseason. Is internal improvement alone going to be enough? Because it didn't really make any big moves.
I don't think it is. I think I have a little bit concerns about their depth. Especially with Noe Belinelli and Ilyasova, you added Wilson Chandler and Mike Muscala there. Of course the X factor is going to be Markel Fultz. I mean, that is going to be, until Markel Fultz, proves, he was worthy of that number one pick, he's going to be the X factor for a long time here. So I don't see them getting close to where Boston and Toronto is, unless there is Fultz gets out of the gates and is reflective of that top pick.
Last one here for Bobby Marks, Boston.
Loaded. Are they willing? I mean, I wrote about it, the willingness to sacrifice. Are these guys, can they accept roles? It's a lot different with Terry Rozier and Marcus Morris going from starter to coming off the bench. And, I think a lot of it will have to do with, Kyrie, the durability of Kyrie, staying healthy for a full season. But from 1 to 10, they are as deep as any team in the NBA. I don't pay much attention to it. I know they've struggled this preseason. I know they'll figure it out because of as a good coach they have. But yeah, I think if you're looking at Boston, they are probably the favorite to come out of the East, along with possibly Toronto here.
All right, final one here for Bobby Marks. So if I was to say right now, and as we tape this, I'm just going to timestamp it because we don't typically do this, but it's about 2:04 Eastern time on a Tuesday in the 700th day of the Jimmy Butler saga. I was to say to you, Bobby, because you've been through these, how does this ultimately play out? What in your view is going to be the end result here? We're not reporting this as sources. We're not doing any of that. This is just
nobody's
going to hear this pod. It's just a little prediction for our podcast until I.
I would expect no movement this week. I think when we get to the weekend, when the reality faces that, hey, we've got a game on Wednesday or Thursday, whenever Minnesota plays, and we've got to set our roster by 3 o'clock on Monday afternoon, that there will be some internal pressure in Minnesota to get a deal done. And I would not be surprised if, Butler's in a Heat uniform by, the end of the first week of the regular season. So I think that's kind of where I see this Butler situation playing out.
For the love of God, another week of this crap?
Well, it's funny, you know, guys, we've only been it feels like it's been a year, but it's only been, I think, what, 3 weeks?
Yeah, it's been about 3 weeks since we tweeted that the Heat were involved and everybody said they weren't. So we'll see if that ultimately plays out. But obviously, if it happens next week, that'd be great, because that's after Khalil Mack has 11 sacks of Ryan Tannehill, and South Florida sports fans will be looking for something to distract them. Bobby Marks, you can follow him at BobbyMarks42. You can find him on ESPN. Always appreciate the time, Bobby. Great stuff.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, Juice, so October is here, and in my mind, that means only one thing. It is almost time for my favorite event of the year, and no big surprise, but it's an O.J. McDuffie party.
Hey, you know it, Big Seth. The 17th annual Signature Grand Ghoul presented by Calvin Giordano and Associates will take place on Monday, October 29th, and once again, benefits 211 Broward, an amazing charity. We are transforming the Signature Grand into a 100,000-square-foot mansion for the sickest Halloween costume party in South Florida.
And this costume party is for the grown folk,
big
not
people.
The kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking open bar, amazing food, dancing, silent auction, and of course, contests and prizes for the most incredible costumes. And since the fish tank will be all up in the ghoul, as will a bunch of other hosts from our Five Reasons Sports family, let's do a little something special for the listeners. So what we need you to do is post a photo in your all-time greatest Halloween costume, tag your favorite Five Reasons Sports podcast, and use the hashtag DiveIntoTheGhoul.
And the top four costumes will have a chance to win two tickets to the Signature Grand Ghoul on that October 29th.
For more information on how you can join OJ and me at the Signature Grand Ghoul, visit 211-Broward.org and call 954-390-0493 and ask for Tracy.